Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the beautiful, sunny, a little bit crisp City of Angels, where, man, I'll tell you, the end of days rains have ended. And if you've ever been to Southern California after it's rained in the winter and you look out and you see the San Gabriel Mountains with snow all over them, you're like, wow, that is really, really pretty. It is a beautiful day in Los Angeles. Just about the only thing going for LA right now is how beautiful it is outside. What's your favorite acronym? What's your favorite acronym? Not safe for work, right? NSFW, that's a very popular one. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, right? WTF, that one is a great acronym. There's all-time famous acronyms like NASA. NASA is a great acronym. But we like to use acronyms to describe things in ways, you know, like, are you kidding me right now? I like to do AYFK, right? Right now. Anyway, the Lakers and Pelicans, by my estimation, can both be clumped under one acronym. That is FUBAR. Are you guys familiar with FUBAR? I'm not allowed, based upon my job and being over the air, to describe what that means. But you do know what that acronym stands for? Good. Good. The point is that everyone is to blame for what is a Titanic-like disaster in Los Angeles. The visual is so real, so rife. It's embarrassing to a guy who calls himself the king. And apparently no one wants to live in his kingdom. Did you see or hear about what happened last night? That was amazing theater. Let me help describe it to you. Okay. I'm sitting there last night. I got a chance to call, two basketball games in 2 days. It's so much fun. I love my job. I've gotten to call NFL games this year, sideline for an NFL game on Fox. I love college basketball stuff. I'll be filling in for Cowherd. I just like doing stuff. So 2 nights ago, Penn State, Northwestern on Fox Sports 1. Last night, Kansas State, Sunflower State showdown after co-hosting the Dan Patrick Show in Manhattan, Kansas. And I'm sitting there in my hotel room, catching a quick nap before going over to Bramlage Coliseum, also known as the Octagon of Doom. And I look down and I say to myself, huh, the Lakers are 2.5-point dogs just after they say they've pulled out of the Anthony Davis sweepstakes. My thought would be, well, that's a galvanizing moment, right? LeBron walks in the locker room and goes, hey, we're all in this together. Let's go make a run. You know, almost like the manager in Major League, right? There's only one thing left to do, win the whole bleeping thing, right? You almost felt like that's what's going to happen. They were 2.5-point favorites playing against the Indiana Pacers. If you need an update on the Indiana Pacers, you're like, oh, they got Victor Oladipo. No, Victor Oladipo's out for the year, and his recovery could take up to a year and a half because he tore the tendon above his patella. It's a nasty injury. Their starting lineup was Tyreke Evans, Darren Collison, Miles Turner, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and Thaddeus Young. Off the bench, Domas Sabonis, rookie Aaron Holiday. They even throw in there Corey Joseph. Remember Corey Joseph, Texas Spurs? Yeah, they got Corey Joseph, also formerly of the Toronto Raptors. It's not like they were throwing out there all-star after all-star after all-star. Rick Smits, Chris Mullin, Reggie Miller. Mark Jackson not walking through that door. And I was like, well, you know, LeBron's back. Kuzma's back. Totally healthy. Rondo's healthy. They got Zubac. That's a wrap. Then they gave up 69 points in the first half, only to top that by giving up 67 points in the second half. And normally, look, you're going to get a full house anytime LeBron comes to town, especially in Indy, a place where he has ended playoff series time and again over the past 5-6 years, going back to his days with the Miami Heat. And credit the Pacers fans for verbally trolling Brandon Ingram and JaVale McGee. How great was that? It was like college all over again. LeBron's going to trade you. LeBron's going to trade you, right? They said that to Brandon Ingram. Like, that's funny. You would think if it was a cohesive unit, if it was LeBron James and all of his guys and they're all in, well, they'd be great. The Pacers won 136-94. And then there's the visual of LeBron on the bench, three chairs between LeBron and the rest of the team. When Luke Walton calls timeout, he did not move. LeBron's in pout mode. The team is done with the current group of guys. You'd be done with him too, as is Luke Walton. And I don't blame them. They're pissed, and rightfully so. Because everything that LeBron James has said and tried to act upon while being a Laker must be a lie. Has to be. Because the rumors came out about LeBron wanting a new coach. And then, of course, this trade has gone astray in which they want Anthony Davis because LeBron wants Anthony Davis. If Rich Paul wants him and he's Rich Paul's client and they're willing to offer up Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and a couple first-round picks, and Lance Stephenson, and Michael Beasley, like, look, I don't care what you tell me face-to-face for 6 months. If I find out that you don't value me enough to want me, instead you want to throw all of us in, the whole kitchen sink trade, I'd be pissed too. I don't blame those guys for saying, F that guy. That's what they said last night. They're basically, without saying a word, they were saying, F you, LeBron. And he's to blame. And so is Rich Paul, who's tried to manufacture this thing, get Anthony Davis' dad to say that the Boston Celtics are disloyal, put rumors out there that LeBron James, tell Chris Broussard LeBron James could play if it was a playoff. Why isn't he playing? Put it out there that LeBron would prefer to have a different coach. And then Magic Johnson can't keep a secret. That's why he's gotten fined for tampering before. And it leaks out there that they're willing to give up everything and anything just to get Anthony Davis. What's amazing about it is, as bad a look as it is for the Lakers, it's frankly equally bad right now for Dell Demps. Unless he picks up the phone and decides to make a deal. Because consider this. Dell Demps is turning down a Herschel Walker trade. That's what it is. A Herschel Walker trade. You're going to give us three really good young players. And you can tell me that you don't think Lonzo Ball will live up to his billing or that his dad makes him untradeable or unacquirable. You can tell me that you don't think Brandon Ingram is nearly the Kevin Durant clone you thought he was going to be, and that's fair. You can sit there and tell me that Kyle Kuzma, all he does is score. Last time I checked, they do award championships to teams that score more points than others. All three of them may not be all-stars. None of them might be all-stars. But if you like their evaluations at all, or if whatever you think of the Lakers, they were a damn good team before they were just besieged by injuries. They were in the fourth spot, and they were 2 games out of the number one spot in the West. And then LeBron got hurt, and Kuzma got hurt, and Rondo got hurt, and Lonzo got hurt. They all got hurt. I mean, think about it. They actually like Kyle Kuzma and like Lonzo Ball. They didn't like D'Angelo Russell, and damn, he's become an all-star. But think about it. Dell Demps is resting his hopes on a trade with the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics general manager is Danny Ainge, who not only has built a champion by acquiring a big three back when he got Kevin Garnett to join Paul Pierce and Ray Allen, but then he began the process of gutting the team and redoing it, pulling off trades like this one. He traded Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Jason Terry for Gerald Wallace, Marshawn Brooks, Chris Humphries, Keith Bogans, Chris Joseph, and a 2014, 16, and 18 first-round pick. And if you remember, the Nets were awful. That's how they got all these players. It's one of the greatest trades in the history of professional sports. Oh, yeah, and Isaiah Thomas, who had his best season of his career with the Celtics playing for Brad Stevens. He traded for Isaiah Thomas with a 2016 first-round pick, and Marcus Thornton is no longer in the league. Then he turned around, and when Isaiah Thomas had a bad hip and wanted a new contract, he moved him, Jay Crowder, Ante Zizic, and the Brooklyn Nets first-round pick, that last one that he acquired, and he got Kyrie Irving. Those are three of the best trades in the history of the sport. And Dell Demps takes a longtime Celtic GM at his word that, hey, maybe Jason Tatum will be out there this summer. The only thing dumber than Magic Johnson not being able to either pull off the move or keep it quiet so that the natives aren't restless is the fact that Dell Demps didn't okay the move. It's equal parts idiocy across the board. The Lakers look like the Titanic, and the Pelicans look like a guy who's standing in front of the Sharks at Shark Tank with a massive overvaluation of the product that they have. Mark Cuban's sitting there laughing, and because of that, I'm out. I blame LeBron. Mostly, I blame Rich Paul because those two are tied at the hip, and he has tried to strong-arm the league into this happening. I blame Magic Johnson because he allowed these two to make decisions and to feel like they were empowered and then to ruin his negotiation. And I frankly blame him for not keeping everything quiet and not knowing, could I get the deal done or not get the deal done? And frankly, I blame Dell Demps. You had a kitchen sink offer and you turned it down because you might have an equal or slightly better offer, but you might not. What if the Celtics win the championship? Or what if Jason Tatum isn't as good as you thought? Or what if Kyrie Irving goes to the New York Knicks and suddenly Anthony Davis refuses to play for the Celtics? And if he doesn't want to play long-term for the Celtics, he could refuse to sign a long-term deal, which hurts his value. And the Celtics would sit there and go like, look, we would have traded Jason Tatum if we knew we were going to have Kyrie Irving, but if we don't have Kyrie Irving, he's not going to want to stay, and so we don't want to trade for him. You had a home run package. I cannot believe how bad both of these sides are. And then watching LeBron James, who is a historically great player, ruin all of his relationships in 1 week with his team is nothing short of remarkable. I've never seen it before. Ever. Ever, ever, ever.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Man, it's been great to have this guy all season long. He's Greg Cosell from the NFL Films, and he's been doing it for 40 years. And I'd love to say that I was surprised, but I wasn't, by the power running attack. But now I'm following guys on Twitter who break down tape, maybe not for as long as you have or as well as you have, but they break down tape and they're like, look, you got to understand there's all different sorts of running schemes and blocking schemes that the Patriots are able to execute because they have smarter players and they prepare better. Is that what you saw, Greg, with their ability to run the football? It wasn't just that they ran it. It was the diversity of styles of attack.
Well, Doug, we've talked about that for the last number of weeks, that they have a very multiple and diverse run game, and they stay with it, and we saw that in the Super Bowl. We saw the different kinds of runs. You know, very often I chart the number of different runs, and I would say the Patriots were probably up in the 13, 14, 15 category in terms of different kinds of run schemes. And to execute that, you know, I remember years ago talking to Phil Sims, and he told me that practicing and executing the run game is actually more difficult than the passing game. Most people just assume the passing game is more detailed and difficult to execute, but the run game is probably more so, and the Patriots are among the best in the league at it.
How did Tom Brady play when you watched him on tape?
Well, you know, I think defense is what made this game. And for a lot of people, that's boring. But when I watched the tape, I was fascinated. And I thought what Wade Phillips did strategically was outstanding, Doug, because he almost took the approach that the Patriots' pass game is very quick rhythm. The ball gets out. So my energies will not be focused on pass rush. My energies will be focused on making him pause a beat in deciphering what we're doing with our coverage concepts. And he did that exceptionally well. He did that by really mixing his coverage looks, by showing different man looks and then playing zone, by showing zone looks and playing man. So he just caused Brady, among the best there is, at deciphering a defense before the snap of the ball. He forced Brady to take an extra beat after the snap of the ball, and that just slowed down the decision-making.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So back to my first question. Like, yes, the defense was dynamic. It was exotic, and it's a good defensive line, although he got rid of the ball really quickly. I mean, did he play well? Did he play poorly and then play well in the last drive? How'd you think he played?
I think he played erratically, and I thought they made a really nice change on that touchdown drive where they went with what we call 22 personnel, two backs and two tight ends, and lined up in empty sets. They did that on three consecutive plays, and they actually ran the same route concept, the same play concept, I should say, on three consecutive plays, which got them down inside the five, and each time Brady hit a different player. He hit Edelman on the juke or jerk route on the first one, he hit Burkhead on the hitch on the second one, and then he hit Gronkowski on the seam on the third one, but it was all part of the same play concept and the same route concept.
By the way, that's what I do in flag football, is we basically, we line up and we have, you know, we have one player route concept, and we just have the quarterback look for a different option every time, and you know, you kind of line up quickly, and while the defense is trying to kind of figure it out, we're going the same thing, only looking kind of to a different part of the football field. That's Gottlieb Football 101. I'm Doug Gottlieb here on Fox Sports Radio. Greg Cosell is our guest. All right, what about the other side? Help me out if I'm wrong. I thought the Patriots didn't have a very good pass rush most of the season.
They didn't.
How do they all of a sudden have a really good pass rush in the playoffs against better teams?
Well, I think that what they did defensively, what Belichick did, to me is really the story of this game, because he had, as we would expect, a defined approach. And what he did in normal down and distance situations, such as first and 10, such as second and 5, second and 6, is he lined up in nickel. He lined up with a 6-1 front, 6 across. So he had Patrick Chung and Kyle Van Noy as outside linebackers, and he had one stacked backer, Dont'a Hightower. And that took away the outside zone run game of the Rams, one of their foundations. Then he played what we call quarters, or cover four. And what that did is it also got safeties with a run responsibility if need be, but it also took away the in-breaking routes, which are an absolute staple of the Rams' first and 10 play-action pass game. So he essentially took away two staples of the Rams' first down offense, where they're so explosive, with his front and with his coverage.
How much of the fact that Jared Goff, you know, the Rams, I've been told, it's all about play action, right? How much of it is when play action, you turn your back to the defense and they were changing some looks that he thought he saw, you know, pre-snap, and then once they snapped the football, they actually changed the look?
Well, that happened on the play in which Cooks was wide open on a busted coverage in the end zone that McCourty had to come over, because that was actually a first down. I believe it was first down. It might have been second down, but it was a shot play type thing.
Yeah, off the timeout, right? They called a timeout, and they saw they had something they thought they liked.
Yeah, and they actually ran a similar concept in the first quarter, but this play came at the end of the third quarter. And what happened is the Patriots showed a cover three look with a single post safety before the snap of the ball. And Goff went play action, turned his back to the defense, and the Patriots rotated to cover four or quarters, which changes the read for Goff when he turns back around. And when he got his head around, it took him a moment to adjust to the read. He didn't adjust quickly enough, and the Patriots busted the coverage, and Cooks was wide open running the vertical seam. And by the time he recognized it, McCourty was able to come over from the backside. So that was an example where they changed the coverage after the snap of the ball, and Goff did not really recognize it quickly enough. It should have been an easy touchdown.
Did Todd Gurley look okay to you physically on tape?
You know, everybody's asking that. No one knows the answer to that. The only thing I'll say is if Todd Gurley was 100% healthy, and we don't know that, but if he was, then to me, Todd Gurley has to play every snap.
Yeah, it was really fascinating that we still haven't, like, usually you get to 48 hours after the Super Bowl, like, oh, hey, by the way, Todd Gurley had, you know, this with his knee or this with his hamstring, right? It's like the Malcolm Butler of last year, right? We never found out exactly what Malcolm Butler did, but we did find out eventually he was checked himself in the hospital, missed the team plane.
Right.
Like, we haven't heard any of that stuff with Butler, and it's not like people haven't asked. There's just no answers.
No, and they're saying that there's nothing wrong. You know, look, teams say what they want. You know that. But, you know, to me, Todd Gurley, all of last year and through the first 12 weeks of this year, was a driving force of that offense. And then he did get hurt and miss a game or two. But unless he was truly hurt, I don't know. You know, so I can't answer that. I don't have a brilliant answer for that.
What's your feeling on Goff now that you've seen him on tape for 2 years in this offense, and you've seen him in some big spots? Look, he had a big boy drive against the Saints, really twice, end of the first half and end of regulation, going back 2 weeks ago. But he didn't play great, and in the face of pressure, really seemed to misread some things and to get rid of the ball at odd times, a little bit late, held on the ball a little bit late. What's your feeling on Goff heading forward?
Well, I think in many ways he's somewhat of a programmed quarterback. I think that things have to be defined for him. The reads and the throws have to be defined. I think an area he needs significant work this offseason, and my guess is Sean McVay knows this a lot better than I do, is he needs to improve as what we call, Doug, a late-in-the-down quarterback, where he stays in the pocket a little longer, where the primary is not defined and he has to read it out. One thing the Patriots did in this game as well is they played more zone concepts, and I think when you play more zone concepts, you force the quarterback to read it out a little more. Man is easier for a quarterback to decipher. So I think that's an area in which he needs to improve. But he is a pretty thrower of the football, and when he is comfortable, he throws it very, very well. So the throwing ability is there, but I think he needs work in what he's seeing when it's not clearly defined and staying through the progressions later in the down.
Let me ask you one last guy, because you're so good at this. And, of course, last year's Super Bowl, Nick Foles lit it up. And at times the Eagles' offense looked better with Nick Foles. They exercised the option,
yeah,
and then he exercised his option for a $2 million buyout. In other words, what's probably going to happen is they're going to franchise tag him and then trade him. The Dolphins might need a quarterback. The Giants, I don't know if they think they need a quarterback. The Redskins definitely need a quarterback, but they're in division. The Jaguars, you would think, need a quarterback, but boy, they got a lot of money sunk into Bortles. The Broncos need a quarterback. Is there a style or system or place that you think Nick Foles fits, having seen him on tape as much as you have?
Well, I think Nick Foles is a, I hate to use this term, is much a system quarterback where the system needs to work for him. I think he's at his best when the ball can come out of his hands relatively quickly. I think the longer he's in the pocket, the less effective he can be. He's kind of an awkward mover at times, but can be effective doing that. There's a deliberate nature to his play, which is why I think the ball needs to come out. I think the Eagles understood this extremely well and tailored their offense to what he did effectively. I think he can be a quality starter in the league, and I think, you know, it will be a function of where he goes, the nature of the offense, and the surrounding pieces.
Great stuff, Craig. I can't tell you how much we appreciate you joining us and kind of teaching us about football weeks after the NFL Thanks so much for joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Doug, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Right. Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Howard Beck's the senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He had two great pieces last week, one on the Porzingis trade, another on the GOAT debate. Also, check out the full 48 podcast with Joe Harris of the Nets. He joins us now on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. For people who did not read it, what's your take on the Porzingis trade from both teams' perspective?
Well, we'll start from the Knicks' perspective since I am New York-based. To me, you know, while they got what was an interesting return, I don't know that it's a home run return when you're trading a guy who's a 23-year-old All-Star, granted one who's still coming back from an ACL, but they basically used Kristaps Porzingis as the means to offload bad contracts of Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee. And I don't know that that was the best use of your 23-year-old All-Star who's still not even yet in his prime. And it sets them back because, you know, this is a team that has already hit the reset button multiple times to try to rebuild. And so this sets them back again, but it gives them double max cap space. And if that gets them two superstars in July, there, you know, no one will care that they sacrificed Kristaps Porzingis. But if they strike out, then this looks like another one of those short-term, short-thinking moves by the Knicks. It was a bit of a stunner, and, you know, Knicks fans have been through a lot, and there haven't been that many homegrown stars to really cheer for. Porzingis represented their best prospect since Patrick Ewing 30-something years ago. So there's that. On the Dallas side of it, as you know, as long as Porzingis gets back to who he was before the ACL injury, a Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis 1-2 punch looks like, you know, their core for a decade or more to come and could be absolutely phenomenal. Two very skilled players, you know, who are obviously very young, a lot of room to grow together. And it's, you know, I think they've already made allusions to the idea that this could be a supersized version of Nash and Nowitzki from 20 years ago. So it should be fun there.
Howard, there's a lot of assumptions. A lot of people assuming that Kevin Durant, it's a done deal. He's going to be a Knick. Where are you in that conversation?
Well, I don't assume anything. All I can tell you is that people around the league have been assuming that and murmuring that, whispering that for months already. The idea that Durant has already signaled through his representation, that has signaled to the Knicks that he's coming. Now, that's all well and good, and people around the league can believe that, and some of them may believe that it's all but a certainty, but it's still up to Kevin Durant to make that call, and that decision point is still 5 months away. So when it comes to the Knicks' gamble, it is a gamble. You can't know for sure. You know, as I wrote last week, it's either a spectacular gamble that if it fails, it could end up with everybody getting fired, or it's not a risk at all because they already know what the outcome is, in which case it's the greatest case of tampering in NBA history, potentially. But that is how the league works, and I'm not casting aspersions at the Knicks. Everybody tampers in this league, and if they've already been assured he's coming and they made the move because of that, well, you know, that then they've made a wise move.
Here's something I don't know if you've been asked. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. You mentioned everybody tampers in this league. I can tell you that there's lots of small market teams that are ticked. I think you know that. And then you look at, I've talked to NFL people, they're like, this is a joke. Right? Can you imagine trying to run a franchise where your best player just, you know, basically demands and holds your whole franchise hostage so he can get to a bigger, better market and play with his friends? Doesn't some of this fall in the leadership or lack thereof of Adam Silver?
That's a complicated question. I mean, you know, the Anthony Davis situation, like other situations before it, where stars have kind of run their course in a particular market and they want out, when you signal it early, and in Anthony Davis's case, it's a year, you know, it's a year and a half away from his free agency, but it's only, you know, months away from when he gets down to the final year of his contract, when that clock starts ticking. You could say the reverse, that, listen, this isn't about a power play, just move me where I want to go. This is also about him telling the Pelicans, listen, I'm not going to resign. I'm not going to sign the extension this summer. I'm not going to sign in free agency in 2020. Move me now and get something for me. It's to their benefit. That's a fair point of view. And now, to the other part of it, of going, you know, trade me where I want to go and only where I want to go, well, he doesn't really have that choice. I mean, his camp is bringing to bear all the pressure and all the manipulation that they can, but at the end of the day, if the Pelicans think the best deal is going to be Boston on July 1st or, you know, Utah tomorrow for all we know, then they can make that deal. And Anthony Davis will have to go there and at least serve out the remainder of his contract. So I don't think it's some major crisis in that regard. The fact that a lot of superstars have moved from smaller markets to larger markets or destination markets over the last 10 years is something I've written about multiple times. I do think it's a big picture concern for the league, but it's not one you can do much about. Ultimately, these guys have, you know, have agency. They have control over their careers, and they, you know, once they served out their contracts, can go where they want to go.
Howard Beck joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Nick Wright joined me earlier in the hour, and he said, hey, look, LeBron did this last year. They had it right before the trade deadline. He shut down on them. They got blown out. They change personnel, and they turn around and make the NBA Finals. Is that what this feels like in L.A. to you?
No. I mean, I understand where Nick is going with that, and I love Nick. But that, you know, LeBron, when he shuts down on a Cleveland team in the middle of a season, on a team that's already been to the finals a bunch, and granted, that team was kind of, you know, it's kind of a mess, but we knew somewhat what to expect from the Cavaliers in general. There was a little bit more of an established identity there. There's no established identity with this Laker team. You know, two-thirds of this roster just got there at the same time that LeBron did last summer. They've got a bunch of weird-fitting pieces. I mean, look, there's no sense that this team is ready to make any kind of upward move other than maybe make the playoffs as a low seed and, you know, just try to give somebody a run in the first round. There's just not enough talent there, and that's been apparent from day one. They signed LeBron, but they couldn't get the second star. They got a bunch of, you know, interesting pieces, you know, Rondo, Lance Stevenson, JaVale McGee, all these guys, but they don't have a complete team. They don't have enough shooting. They're trying to remedy that by bringing in Reggie Bullock. They don't have enough shooting. Their bigs are flawed at best, and so you've got this three-man rotation of McGee and Tyson Chandler and Zubac. It's not a complete team. They've got the greatest player in the game, but he's been hurt, and it's not a complete team, and Lonzo Ball is out. So the Lakers are going to be hard-pressed, you know, just to make the playoffs.
Do you think that the Anthony Davis trade does get consummated before tomorrow's deadline?
I do not. I don't think there's any reason for the Pelicans to do it, frankly, and I never have thought they should. There are two options that are out there that you need to at least have in front of you as a possibility. One is, of course, the Celtics, with the possibility of getting Jason Tatum and others and picks, and you can't do that until July 1st because of, you know, weird cap wrinkles. And the other one is Zion Williamson. If you believe, and there's a huge debate around the league about whether Zion Williamson is really going to be a star in this league, but if you believe he is, and if you want him to possibly be a target in an Anthony Davis trade, then you have to at least wait to see who gets his draft rights in the lottery. So we won't know that until May. So if I'm the Pelicans, I want those options on the table. Even if I don't pursue them ultimately or make a deal for the Zion pick, or with the Celtics, I still want those on the table. I want all my options available because you're trading one of the best players in the NBA.
I understand that, but I mean, like, the Lakers trade is a Herschel Walker trade, right? Like, you might be mad. I think Kuzma's a good... do I think Kuzma's a superstar? No. Do I think Lonzo's a superstar? No. I'm not a huge Brandon Ingram guy, but you get all three of them, some draft picks, some cap relief, and you're not terrible. You still have Jrue Holiday. Like, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good basketball team, considering, you know, like, what are your alternatives? You're going to get Jason Tatum and a pick? Like, that doesn't...
It wouldn't be Jason Tatum and a pick. It would probably be Jason Tatum and possibly Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart, maybe Gordon Hayward. And they've got multiple picks. The Celtics have all their own picks available to them. Plus, they've got the Memphis pick, the Clippers pick.
Tell me somebody that's come away doing business with Danny Ainge that's been like, man, we killed it in that trade.
I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm saying that if you want the best possible package in front of you, and if you believe, as most of the league believes, that Jason Tatum is better than any single player the Lakers have to offer, then you wait and you make that deal instead.
If he becomes available.
Well, you know,
and remember, yeah, like the Celtics, okay, that means that they keep Kyrie, because we don't know if they keep Kyrie, right?
The Celtics have been ultimately confident that he's going to stay. Now, Kyrie is a strange personality and unpredictable, and it's hard to understand, you know, how to read anything he might say. But the Celtics still believe he's staying. And if he's staying and he and Anthony Davis are pals, then that's the incentive for Anthony Davis to want to stay after the trade and to sign an extension.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Howard Beck, senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. And lost in all of the nonsense that happened in Indy is what happened when I woke up this morning and I was like, wait, the Philadelphia 76ers just overpaid for Tobias Harris. But, like, you add Tobias Harris to the other four starters they already have, those are pretty good pieces. What do we think now about the 76ers, who have still struggled, even though more talented, struggled to adjust chemistry-wise to having Jimmy Butler?
Yeah, and my concern with this deal, and listen, adding Tobias Harris, it's a position of need. They now have one of the best starting fives in the NBA. That their bench is really woeful, but the starting five is excellent. And if you mix and match with bench pieces, and so you always have a couple of your stars on the floor, you'll be all right. And, you know, look, Tobias Harris was a borderline all-star this year and is a really good player. And I think it's a great trade for them in that regard. And in the short term, it strengthens them in their bid to win the East. And, you know, the future's uncertain with Jimmy Butler being a free agent. With there have been some tensions there, and you don't know for certain that he's coming back. So I think it did ultimately, in the short term, it made them strong enough to potentially get past Boston and Milwaukee and Toronto to win the East. That's obviously the short-term goal. And then beyond that, on July 1st, if Jimmy Butler decides he wants to go somewhere else, or you decide as an organization, you know what, this was just a little bit too much drama for us, you can re-sign Tobias Harris instead, and you've got him to go with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and J.J. Redick. So I think it gave them more options, more flexibility, and again, in the short term, it makes them stronger.
Fascinating times in the NBA. All right, well, I know you're busy over the next 23 hours or so. Thanks so much for spending some time with us, Howard.